this week, as I looked over Sarah's draft for today's service and E.B. White's words, which she shared with us this morning, I arise in the morning torn between a desire to improve the world and a desire to enjoy the world. That makes it hard to plan my day. And I thought, did she read my mind this morning? How did she know this is my struggle too? And then as I reread what she had sent me, I noticed there is the word and in there, and not or. And I thought, well, maybe we can do both. For me, savoring what I love about the world, I think helps me to improve it. For example, I think it is my savoring of the moment as I soak in some sights of nature in the mornings, and my joyous curiosity about people that maybe helps me to improve race relations in Rockford and at NIU in some small ways. At the Ethnic Festival in Rockford next weekend, our church's Justice for All Committee hopes to encourage people to share their stories about what their ethnicity means to them, or about their journey or their family's lives as they moved to or lived in the U.S. with others similar and different to themselves, with people who are curious to hear their stories. This is hopefully a way to make the process of improving race relations or relations between each other a combination of enjoying the world while also trying to improve it. Let's hope we can make it work. Having grown up in India, which just celebrated 69 years of independence, I know that sometimes a struggle is necessary to gain freedom. I believe there is an and as we think about supporting our troops and promoting peace in the world rather than an or. And at this time, I want to welcome Sarah again as she prepares to talk with us more about that. Now let us rise in body and or spirit and sing hymn number 155, Circle Round for Freedom.
Please be seated. So our reading this morning comes from this book I was waving around earlier. It's called War Zone Faith, an Army Chaplain's Reflections from Afghanistan by UU Military Chaplain George Chiger. And he's been deployed, and he's saying that one night, several weeks before going home, he laid awake thinking of all he'd been through. And he tried to imagine how the time had changed him, or if at all, and he wrote these lines. I am an Afghanistan war veteran. I don't want your pity. I've served two tours with honor. I've been shot at, blown up. I put friends into body bags, seen men die, sent them home for the last time. According to the popular myth, I should be a crazy, unstable, angry PTSD victim. I am none of these. The TV news says you should be careful around me. They say I need help. I will never be the same because of what war has done to me. When you look at me, don't see a caricature. When you hear my story, don't sigh or look away. When you think of me, don't wish I had never gone to war. War has not scarred me for life. It has made me more. I am a better man than I was before. I know the value of life more intimately. I know compassion given and received. I know courage seen and lived. I know love, for it is love that has kept me alive. Not bombs, not bullets, not body armor. These only kept me from dying. Love keeps me living. Chaplain George Tiger, August 2012, Fort Carson, Colorado. We're so lucky to have one of our most talented music directors in the UUA here with you all. And I want to say a special thanks to Emily, Tim's niece, who provided this beautiful music for us, and say a welcome to her father, Scott, who's here with us as well. And now if we can shift our mood and our space, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a time of centering meditation and prayer. Dear God, you who are light and love, be with us today. Be with those families who are in the transition back to school. Be with those of us who have a worrying visit to a doctor coming up, who are grieving, who are hurting, who are lost. Celebrate with us our many joys today, those who've had recent birthdays, new loves, new possibilities, new life. And we turn our minds also to our larger world this morning. We ask for your mercy for the many who have been affected by the floods in Louisiana and now Texas, the wildfires in California, the yellow fever outbreak in Africa, the many people who live in places of conflict and war and strife. And we ask a special prayer this morning for all of our service members serving in our military, our Marines, Coast Guardsmen, our Army soldiers, Navy, and Air Force, all around the world and here domestically, that they be safe and that they be whole. For all these things, we give our thanks and we ask for your energy, strength, and compassion. Amen. So when I was in seminary, I started at a young 26 years old. My very first year, I did my clinical pastoral education work, which for those of you who are not familiar with how we do ministerial formation, all of us are required to do an intensive at a hospital or a hospice setting or a prison to learn what chaplaincy is all about and to be kind of turned inside out, as one will, on the way to becoming a minister. And so there I found myself at a veterans hospital in Martinez, California. And my very first day, I was surprised and intimidated to find out that I'd been assigned to the psych ward, where I'd be the only chaplain present. Now, although my dad had served in the Navy, I had little direct experience with the military myself. He was not a career Navy person. He had served before I was born. And I didn't have really a lot to inform me in connecting with the patients that I would encounter there. Plus, I had no experience in the mental health field, but boom, there I was, the chaplain. And I had a pretty steep learning curve, I'll tell you. However, I really quickly discovered that I was the only staff member whose job it was to learn the stories of the men and women around me. While everyone else was rushing around, filling patient quotas and taking care of medicines and tests and paperwork, I had the time to take the smokers out for a break or to dig weeds with the patients who had signed up for gardening therapy. I sat with the patients who were doing occupational therapy, stitching wallets together, and I listened in on group therapy sessions. I hung out in the patient recreation room and made myself available simply to listen or to have a talk or to say a prayer. And people wanted to talk. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be prayed for, and they wanted to share their stories. I'm grateful in so many ways that I had the opportunity to work in that VA hospital. I met some extraordinary people. Because it turns out that serving as the director of ministries at the Unitarian Universalist Association, which involves a fairly large set of duties, I oversee our Office of Church Staff Finance that provides all of our health insurance, retirement funds, and so forth for all of our religious professionals. I oversee ministerial credentialing and continuing education and settlement services. And I also oversee youth and young adult ministries. Oh, and by the way, religious education. But as an adjunct duty, I have the honor of being the official endorser of military and VA chaplains, a role that I share with some 200 interfaith colleagues who represent their faith traditions. And because being beyond the barbed wire, so to speak, often means that our airmen, sailors, Marines, Coasties, and soldiers don't have access to exercising their right to free expression of faith, military chaplains who are non-combatants serve alongside them to facilitate their spiritual expression and care. So because chaplains are not allowed to touch weapons, they actually travel with the security guard at all times when deployed to a war zone. They are on ships, they are in boot camp settings, they are in hospitals, they're on air bases, army installations, and Coast Guard camps all around the world. And we Unitarian Universalists have actually been in the military chaplain corps since the very beginning. In fact, the very first chaplain commissioned by George Washington for the Continental Army was the Unitarian minister William Emerson, the grandfather of Ralph Waldo Emerson. And John Murray, if any of you know your Universalist history, the famous Universalist who landed at Barnegat Bay, New Jersey, and brought the idea of universal salvation to our shores, was also among this very first group of 20 chaplains. When challenged by his fellow chaplains that Murray was a heretic and not worthy of the office, George Washington himself defended him, saying, "I have commissioned him as a chaplain, and you will respect him as such." And thus began a very interesting and challenging experiment in religious pluralism in the chaplain corps that continues to this day. Now, although this is a side duty, I've come to have a huge passion for this ministry. And interestingly, in reading your church history in preparation for my visit today, I learned that there have been a few connections with military ministry in your past. Are some of you aware of these? Well, I'll tell you. So during the Civil War, the Reverend Augustus Conant, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who served here from 1857 to 1964, left and enlisted in the Illinois Infantry, where he actually died in service from overexertion, according to your history, while serving as a chaplain. And then during World War I, it's noted that every organization in this church cooperated to hold weekly Saturday night dances for the Camp Grant soldiers. There was a large camp here between World War I and II. Some of you may still remember it, which has been closed right after World War II. And at the start of World War II, your minister, John Ruskin Clark, resigned his ministry here to become a Navy chaplain and serve in that war. So you have a proud connection to this history too. But during the Vietnam War, Unitarian Universalist ministers largely left the services in protest of that war. We had one left who stayed through that time. And actually, it was not just us, but most of the liberal Protestant denominations that followed suit, which led to the unintended consequence that the chaplaincy in the military became largely dominated by conservative and evangelical Christians. Today, we're making a comeback. We have 18 UU chaplains serving in active duty, reserve, guard, and military auxiliary service all over the world. We currently have ministers deployed in Iraq, Germany, and Kuwait, as well as here in the U.S. To give you a little window into the world of chaplaincy, I'm going to share another little excerpt from George's book, Warzone Faith. So George is an active duty chaplain. He's been deployed twice to Afghanistan. He's married to Jennifer. They have three children. So of course, it's very tough on his family when he deploys, but this is what our chaplains sign up for. And their job is essentially to make meaning in the midst of the horror of war. In this story, George describes rumbling down the street in the back of an MATV. There's a lot of acronyms in the military, even more than in the Unitarian Universalist world. That is a smaller version of the mine-resistant ambush-protected truck, otherwise known as Humvees around here. They've been warned of an IED on the route. That's a bomb that's hidden under the pavement. And the fact that no, or under the dirt road, I should say, and the fact that no medevac copters are currently able to fly. Okay, so that's the situation he's in. The convoy commander, 23-year-old Sergeant Barley, navigates the four vehicles, Victor's, and 19 passengers, PACs, through the ancient, crowded, and dangerous streets of Kandahar City, Afghanistan. There have been several IEDs found across the city in the past 72 hours. With vigilance and luck, all were found before they detonated. Still, we are prepared every time we go out to get blown up. Most of the time when this happens, the truck is mine-resistant enough to save lives, most of the time, and this is the backdrop against which I conduct my ministry every day. I'm headed to Police Substation 1. Just weeks before, a suicide bomber attacked this PSS, killing a young soldier and wounding five others. I arrived 45 minutes after the blast and helped the remainder of the platoon clean up the debris and begin putting their lives back together. I prayed over the mangled body of the soldier before he began his long trip home. I helped mop up blood from the floors and the walls. I literally dug in and did the hard work of combat ministry. This was not the first dead soldier I have sent home, and he was not the last. I'm acutely aware that before I step foot on American soil again, there will be more. As an Army chaplain, my job is to help young men and women make sense of all this, but there are times I cannot make sense of it myself. In this place, existential questions are not philosophy discussed at coffee hour. While every human being must struggle with what it means to be human and thus to be mortal, zipping a black bag over the breathless body of a friend puts a new sense of urgency on the questions of life and death. In combat, honesty demands that we finally come clean with ourselves and admit that answers do not exist, only questions and only human responses to human frailty. Praetorian Base, this is Dark Horse 1-6. We're RPPSS-1. For Victor's 18 packs, we've got the chaplain for you. Roger 6-1, send him in. Already on his way. See you next time. 1-6 out. I haul myself up the dusty entry road and into the now cleaned up PSS. Dropping my gear, I look around at the scene. A new building stands there now where debris and death were not so long ago. A young soldier sees me from a distance and quickens his step to greet me. I have not seen him since I sent his friend on his final ride home. He throws his arms around me. The embrace nearly takes my breath away with its power. "Sir, I'm so glad you're here. We missed you," he says with his arms still tight around me. In that single moment, all my questions, all my fears, all my confusion fade away. I know why I'm here, why I do what I do, and what it means to live in a broken and fragmented world. There is nothing in the world I would rather have done that day than rumble down the dirty, ancient, dangerous streets of Kandahar City, building meaning in the midst of war. I've read that like 50 times, and it still gets me every time. I'm just so moved by the ministry of our military chaplains. And I am constantly aware that these are very young adults that they're working for, mostly 18 to 23-year-olds. But I also want to share another story, and this is about the importance of our UU congregations in providing spiritual sustenance and a sense of welcome and belonging to our military members and their families and veterans. I noticed one gentleman, I don't know which one you are now, had an Army veteran hat. How many veterans do we have in here? Thank you. And how many have family members who are veterans? Almost everybody, and friends who've served? Okay, and are any active military service members here? Thank you for your service. And you're not, okay. And where is he? He's in Afghanistan. So, well, luckily, we're not having as many body bags coming home these days, very, very rarely. So I will put him in my prayer list. We'll talk after. So Kimberly Sweeney went to the military as a 20-year-old, and she loved being in the Army. She loved the physicality of it. She loved the structure and the leadership opportunities. A born and raised UU, she couldn't find any religious services or personnel on her base who could serve her. So she went to a nearby fellowship every week. And in her unit, she was one of four women, and as is unfortunately often the case, she and her female colleagues experienced a tremendous amount of sexual harassment. Her congregation was her one place of refuge every week, where she was treated with respect and warmth, and where she could find the spiritual strength to continue. In her words, that congregation was such an intense breath of fresh air. Here was a group of people living authentically faithful lives, and they were asking those big questions with each other. I felt safe and held when I was sharing my profound grief, my joys, my concerns. It was the only place where I was called by my first name. The message that I heard every Sunday was life-changing for me. And in fact, Kimberly now works for the UUA as a field staff person. She's dedicated her life to our movement after leaving the Army. I do understand, though, that it can be a struggle sometimes to reconcile our UU commitment to peace and embracing military ministry. As Shiraz says, I like to think of it as an and rather than an or. I myself have long been a peace activist, and I couldn't honestly be more surprised than to find myself walking the halls of the Pentagon 4 times a year, because I'm now serving not only as our endorser, but the chair of all the endorser body, the National Conference on Ministry of the Armed Forces. First Unitarian Universalist to do that. I take up my office actually in January, and that's quite a story. If you ever want to hear a good story about interfaith challenge, I'll tell you that one someday. So if we're serious, though, about embracing our first and seventh principles, which embrace the radical worth of every person, as well as recognize our profound interdependence, we need to allow perhaps a little bit more nuanced understanding of what it means to be part of a society that's served by a large and complex military, the most diverse institution in our nation, and, as I said, one that's largely populated by young adults. So whether you're the kind of person who joins peace protests or lobbies Congress or not, those of us who are civilians and have never served, those who are not family members, military family members, are just as reliant and connected to our military as those who are more closely connected. And we collectively share the burden of moral and ethical wrongs that are committed by our military in war, just as we collectively benefit from the relative safety that our military provides us, as well as from the many technological and medical advances that come from the military. Every time I'm in my car, I'm mindful that that GPS I'm relying on came from Air Force technology. And there are recent medical advances that arise from the trauma of war. There have been tremendous improvements in emergency response team capabilities, in advanced treatment for brain trauma, in prosthetics, and in pain management, unfortunately, due to the trauma of war. So clearly, it is our service members and veterans and family members who carry the greatest burden in all regards relative to military service. But what I'm telling us is that we're all beyond the barbed wire. We're all connected, like it or not, and there is richness and challenge to be found in a deeper, more mature engagement with the huge community of service members, their families, and our veterans, if we encourage, welcome, lift up, notice, and learn the stories of those whose experiences differ from our own. So, just in wrapping up, there are some simple ways that congregations can indicate a greater welcome. A lot of us have rainbow flags. I notice you have several banners outside of your thing proclaiming your love for different things. I like to encourage people to have not only a rainbow flag, but an American flag that will signal a welcome to people who might be serving in our military. We have a wonderful religious education program called Military Bridge Builders Toolkit. It's a 6-part curriculum that allows you to learn more about military members. There's a video series interviewing several UU people serving in the military and some of our chaplains. And they give you all sorts of ideas about how we can become a place of healing and wholeness and welcome, and how we can support family members whose beloved ones are deployed right now. It's amazing what we can all learn when we come to see each other as human beings with a story to tell, a life to honor, and a spirit to respect. May we one day live into a greater peace in which all souls are reconciled and all people cherished and safe. Blessings and amen. I'd like to invite you to rise as you're able in body and spirit and sing number 146, Soon the Day Will Arrive.
Soon the day will arrive.
I'll now extinguish our chalice. Oh, you take hands. These are the traditions I don't know. As we take hands, I'm going to extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth or the warmth of community or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. The words from our benediction are from the Reverend Darcy Roque, a UU minister who lives in New Orleans, and the daughter of a career Marine. She was born at Camp Pendleton, and here are her words. There is too much hardship in this world to not find joy every day. There is too much injustice in this world to not right the balance every day. There is too much pain in this world to not heal every day. Each of us ministers to a weary world, to save or to savor. Let us go forth now and do that which calls us to make this world more loving, more compassionate, and more filled with joy and the grace of divine presence every day. Amen.